Hi, I'm Steve.
How's it? I'm Samon.
And welcome to the Business and Beers podcast.
Hey, hola, as we like to call them, our faithful Business and Beers listeners. We have a really exciting episode today with our guest. Her name's Kalisha Urquhart. I hope I pronounced it correctly. If I didn't, when she intros herself shortly, she'll tell us how to pronounce it correctly. And as she says, in the Scottish way, where she comes from. Kalisha's an exciting guest for me because she was actually my first client for my business. We worked together at an agency before where she was my manager. And then, yeah, that's pretty much how Kalisha and I met. Simon and I always chat as we finish with one guest who's going to be our next guest. And I remember chatting to Kay, as I call her, months and months ago before we started our podcast. I said, if I had to start a podcast, would you be a guest? And she was, yes, sure, from the get-go. So now we finally had a chance to get her on the show. So Kalisha, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then our favorite question, what's one random thing that not many people would know about Kalisha?
Oh, that's a good question. Hello, everyone. I am Kay, Kalisha, KJ, Kalisia, Kalish. And any other variation anyone can come up with when they see or try to spell my name. It's Kalisha Urquhart in South Africa and Kalisha Urquhart in Scotland. So lovely to be joining you guys. And I'm so excited because I've gotten to see this come to life and watch Steve's journey. And I feel incredibly proud to be here. Would you like to hear a little bit about me?
Yes, please. Tell
okay. Our guests. Gosh, okay. My elevator pitch. I am the CEO of Digital Doorway. It is a niche digital transformation consulting firm, and we focus on performance marketing. I partner with some people like Stephen, who help us achieve brilliant client goals with digital marketing for B2B or P2C. And I've been doing social media and digital since 2014, which makes me start to feel older and older every time I say it. And I love solving problems. So I'm an obsessive problem solver. I have a degree in marketing and anthropology, in media and anthropology from WITS. So I also love the aspects of humanity and culture, and how do we behave ethically as marketers is probably one of my biggest ways of approaching what we do. How do we not only be led by profits and growth, but also real world people? And how do we not spam, irritate, and undermine all the good stuff? And something people don't know about me, that's a very good question. I used to ride horses when I was a kid. I did show jumping, and I unfortunately couldn't carry it on because I have an extra vertebra at the top of my spine.
Sure. No, that is super interesting. Kay, I love how your degrees have came together. So that was the topic that Simon and I wanted to chat to you about today. It was managing people during a pandemic. So it's really interesting because you said how you love solving problems. Let's start and chat about that. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic has been a massive problem. So chat to us how you manage your team. How did you keep the up? Obviously, there was months and months. I don't even know if you're back in the office. Is your team back in the office? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So, gosh, what a year. It's been incredible. I think we have all been pushed and tested to our limits. And I feel incredibly lucky. When I started the business 4 years ago, we turned four on the 1st of December.
Happy birthday.
We built a remote-based workforce. So our company set up from day one was, I hate going into an office. I hate traveling between meetings. I think it's incredibly inefficient and unnecessary. And 4 years ago, I was even more idealistic and willing to do things differently. And we were so lucky that we set things up that way. And I think so many businesses found themselves in a pickle where their workforce were not able to come into an office. So we had, you know, completely remote servers. You can access our server from your phone. You can attach, you know, whatever you need from a server to an email. You can access your email from a phone. You can access our social media software tools and platforms from a phone. So we deal with things like load shedding in South Africa. We deal with things like not having a communal office space during a pandemic. And I'm incredibly passionate about digital transformation, not only from a marketing perspective, but also an efficiency and operations perspective. And I often end up coming in to help a customer do one thing and then like restructure their organization because I can't help it, noticing weak areas and noticing weak spots. So to get back to your question about people and the pandemic, I not only had to navigate my own business, but I had to hold my customer's hand and help them realize that, you know, people actually do work and are very happy to not have to get dressed in the morning and have to travel and go somewhere. It takes a lot of energy. And so I think although it's been incredibly hard to adapt quickly because people do not like change and they do not like having to be forced to change very quickly, I think it's been an incredible mindset shift because everyone has realized that they could, that you can deal with an issue and make a change and that everyone can get on board pretty quickly. So we're not back at the office, but we do have an office space. I have been going for the odd meetup, but I'm trying to keep customers used to online meetings because I'm a fan of the efficiency. And yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question. I can ramble.
Yeah, 100%. That goes into something that this whole change and adaptability and looking at clients and like you say, working with your customers and stuff now, but I mean, do you find that companies that have adapted in COVID, I know everyone hates that word now, but the companies that have adapted and overcome that change are now starting to see a huge amount of success because we see, I would say like a big split in old mindsets of companies and a new set of mind companies. So your old set of companies or mindsets are people that believe you have to have someone in the office regardless of what they're doing in the office. If I can see them, I can manage them. And then you're getting a complete new mindset or new workforce, which is now kind of just detected on your output. So, you know, we monitor and see what you're doing and then kind of rate it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my biggest frustrations is working with big organizations who can't change quickly and can't just do it. So I deal with some more modern customers and companies, you know, where we've got sort of e-commerce solutions and we're very agile and they are incredibly adaptable and listen to the feedback because the feedback literally has a direct effect on sales. Whereas your more traditional businesses, the B2B organizations, they are a slow moving organization. They're a slow moving beast. The wheels take months and years. And I have like zero patience for it. But what I've realized is these things will come to fruition if there's a champion. If there's someone who doesn't get deterred, there's someone who is willing to be a champion for what's necessary and willing to continue the fight and not stop the conversation. I think that a lot of companies realize that their staff will do work, but they have no means of actually getting intelligence internally. And so a couple of them have implemented great internal reporting systems, things like sales CRM systems, where they can actually watch sales being processed internally. They can see conversion rates on their sales team. They can see response rates. And so they've realized the need for better software and better systems that traditionally you sort of felt was taken care of by a spreadsheet and the person sitting opposite you in an office.
Brilliant. I think this also goes into what you were saying earlier on the ethics piece, because chatting with companies now, I also see that monitoring software can either do really good things for the company, but it can also have huge consequences because, for example, I'm a person that I'm perfectly fine. Let me run. My work will always be done. I'll always meet my deadlines. I'll always meet my targets, etc. But then you look at other people where you put this monitoring software in place and people feel like it's kind of an invasion because you don't trust me. I mean, how do you overcome that? Or like, what is your suggestion for companies that are going through this process? Because chatting with a lot of business owners, this is something that we spoke about on the last podcast. How do I relinquish control of my people, trust that they're going to get it done, with also not breaking that like ethical barrier of saying, I want to watch you 24/7?
Oh, totally. Great question. It was one of my peeves when I worked in agencies of
timesheets,
you know, having to track what you're doing. That's just inefficient, right? And what I would say my answer is to this exact question with customers, you have to make it meaningful, right? So you need to help your team understand why. Number one, you have to sell the vision, the why we're doing this. And number two, you need to make sure that they feel like they're part of the process in terms of the decision making, in terms of what they're going to have to make use of. If they never get to have a say, it's like telling kids that they've got to eat veggies for dinner. You know, they need to understand that it's nutritional and that it's good for them and that they're going to age well and have good bones. But if you're not explaining the why, people don't understand. And if you're not making it meaningful to them in a tangible way as to how this helps you do your job better, they will never comply. Compliance in big organizations or small organizations is impossible if you do not make your team understand and believe.
Yeah, I love that. And you brought up a point maybe 2 questions ago, but about being a champion. I really like that, because the thing is about being a champion is you don't necessarily have to know everything. Like, you don't need to know the whole process, but you have to know what you stand for. And I think that's quite important. So let's chat a little bit about that, about championing a situation or championing, it doesn't need to be a certain business situation, but something that you really believe in. Okay, this is obviously maybe something you studied or, but like, chat to us a little bit about that. How do you do it in a way that you don't offend people in the workplace or offend your employees, but you care about something and you want to get that message across?
I don't care about offending people. And that might sound like harsh and brash, but you can't be a champion of something if you're going to worry about making everyone happy. You need to be tactful, yes, and diplomatic, and you need to learn the subtle art of negotiation, but you also sometimes need to not give 2 cents. And what I mean by that is, I won't, don't worry. What I mean by that is you have to not worry about who you're going to annoy, because at the end of the day, if we're after the same thing, if our company has a collective vision and we have shared values, then me annoying you by making you do more admin because I really, really, really believe that this thing is important shouldn't matter to me making it important.
But that's something that maybe people miss completely, is the culture of your organization. That not necessarily everyone is going to fit the culture of the organization at the different stages that it grows, because your culture is, I can't say it's indefinitely always going to be the same. Different stages of your business are going to require different people. And sometimes it is also about that ruthless piece of being a business owner. And potentially that's maybe the culture or feeling of South Africans, is that we're very hearty people. We care a lot about people. But sometimes people are actually just not a good fit for the vision that you want to take your business. And the problem is, by keeping these people in the fold, it's like that whole analogy of the rotten apples. Actually, not even the rotten apples. It's a funny thing. I got stuck into the Facebook wormhole of videos. And I found this video where this guy was dealing with a pregnant snake. And I actually found it so interesting, because the snake had all these eggs in her basket, and he was removing these eggs really quickly. And I was like, what the heck's this oak doing? But then he explained the concept that if 3 or 4 eggs are rotten underneath and you don't pick that up quick enough, what happens is those 4 eggs kill the whole batch of like 100 eggs. Jeez. And that mother will not have babies. And I saw that analogy back into an organization, is that I think business owners need to really take a hard look sometimes and start looking at which people fulfill the culture and the vision. And if they don't, I mean, it's a tough call, but you need to kind of get rid of them. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I have this phrase I've been using, and I'm going to write a piece and unpack it, but I call it like ruthless efficiency. And when you're a business owner, number one is your time is so limited and so stretched that you kind of get pulled in so many directions and distracted by so many things that you have to keep reminding yourself to stay on task, stay with what's important, make the specifically necessary instructions, and you need to be able to hire people that make people feel good, because that's not your job. Your job is to sell the vision and the values and to help your team either join the fold and be part of the ship or not be a factor because they're just not a good fit.
Yeah, this kind of goes into a complete rip the scab off topic, but my opinion, maybe we don't empower enough people locally, because I think this whole culture and stuff that we've got locally, and it's a massive challenge, and you know, we can have 300 podcasts discussing this. I was listening to guys out in the States, and they were talking about how do you maximize the sales performance of the team. And what they actually did is they broke down the whole company down onto a spreadsheet, and from the spreadsheet they had all the different people's roles. Those different people's roles were tied exactly what you say, to an hourly rate, to expenses, to all of this. And I speak specifically on the salespeople side, but the way that the business worked is everything that you did in the business was accounted for in the spreadsheet. And then once you hit all of your targets and all of your payments in the business, so they'll calculate you have 5 cups of coffee, this, that, whatever. So your total cost to the company is 30,000 Rand. Anything that you do over that, you then get rewarded for that. But I find that locally, and again, you know, this completely goes on a tangent, because that now bound like borderlines the ethics of monitoring software, and you know, but the whole concept of what they're speaking about is something that maybe we as businesses miss completely locally, is that we don't empower people enough to actually have a view of what is the impact that I've got in the business. Because if you're paying someone complete minimal wage, like, they don't know what the hourly rate is worth. I mean, if you look at the paycheck, for me as a person, how am I going to be motivated if you're paying me 5 Rand an hour? Like, it's never, ever going to happen. And maybe business owners are not having those conversations with people to say, like, your hourly rate is actually this. This is the impact. This is the value.
Yeah, I think, Kay, if it's okay, I'm actually going to answer this question for you. So the way Kay has approached this is, she's always said to us, I'm here to hire experts, and what is your rate? And I'll give you the power and the ability to fulfill your task. So me as a supplier to Kay, I'm pretty sure this is how she works with her employees as well. And I think that's the difference, is if you're sitting as a business owner, you've got to respect someone's value that they bring and allow them to bring that value, if you know what I mean. Like, to say, well, you're charging X per hour, but show me that X per hour value. But then, okay, let's swing this question a bit now. So you've done this. You've obviously really good at this. You've got a couple of suppliers. But now you have a supplier that's giving you that hourly rate, but you're not getting the value. So how do you, like Simon's situation, do you go into this whole Excel spreadsheet to try and see what value are they bringing to your business? How do you manage that? Or have you only had great suppliers? Obviously, I think your business, you said, is 4 years old. So I'm not sure. I'm only a year in, and I've had some terrible suppliers already.
Yeah, look. Both internally and externally, staff and suppliers, this is a real issue. How do you get the value out of the person that is supposed to deliver? You cannot tell it from an interview. You cannot get it off of a quote. You often even can't get it out of the actual output of work. I have to be honest, I will not do a spreadsheet, because I've learned to trust my gut and my intuition. And I have learned that through working with terrible suppliers and terrible people. And so you sort of learn, it's more a case of the qualities somebody has than what their skill set is on paper. Because certain kinds of people are going to be compulsive value adders. They're going to be people who commit to a deadline and deliver. And certain other people are just not. So I guess what I've learned to do is have a bit of a value criteria of what I'm looking for and what I need people to be able to deliver. And when they don't seem to be delivering, I look at what we agreed to, what the output or the commitment seems to be, having a real direct conversation about it and offering someone the opportunity to explain, to offer solutions. Often we just don't have enough real conversations. We're kind of afraid. I think everyone operates in a certain amount of fear. And so just being willing to make yourself vulnerable and approach that fear often makes the biggest difference.
You hit the nail on the head there. And, you know, for myself, coming from a software background, the misconception that a lot of people have is that I'm going to put a piece of software in my organization and it's going to solve a lot of my problems. So one of, I would call it the biggest challenges that we have in businesses now is this AI in CV automation and valuation, exactly what you're speaking about now. It would actually be so cool for someone to do a study of how many people have fallen through the cracks that would probably be a 3,000% fit for the job. But exactly that, I think the biggest downfall is, and don't get me wrong, there's definitely a place for software. There's definitely a place for all these facets in a business. But the thing that I find nowadays is we get pushed with this digital transformation. We get pushed with, you know, software, and we're missing the real conversations. And I think until you start having the real conversations in your business, in your organization, because that's ultimately what people want. Like, again, software is great. It's definitely got a place in business, but I think people have fallen away from having the real conversations, from having those hard conversations, because the hard conversations aren't easy and they're not nice. But until you start having them, they're never going to happen and you're never going to move forward.
Yeah, I think the reason though is because people always think conflict in business is a bad thing. I don't think it's like I've said it before, if I could have a business partner, the two of us actually shouldn't, we should be like-minded and have the same values, but we should disagree sometimes. Mm. You know, and Kay, I think you're much more of a people's person than I am. So if you could give someone two or three tips, how have more of these conversations? Because it's right, it's communication that's the problem, right? So if you could give our listeners, you being the CEO of a successful business, how do you communicate effectively?
Okay. Do not be afraid to fail, because it provides our greatest lessons. Do not be afraid to do things badly, so be brave and lead by example. It sucks to have conflict. Humans instinctually never want conflict, because when we were cave people, it meant we died. Or when we were in the medieval ages, you know, we died. So these are built in ingrained things. Conflict equals death and war. And what I've learned, and especially something that women are not often taught, which I think boys' schools bring out in you, is the sort of like mashing up against each other and bumping off each other and having these little tiffs and fights and shouting matches, because that's where truth lies, you know. And if we're afraid to have an opinion and we're afraid to say something against the grain, we're never going to progress. We're never going to hear about the real issues. And so I think it's on you to facilitate. The biggest role of a CEO is not to do everything perfectly, and it's not to create every solution possible. It's to get the right players in your team and to have them be honest with you and to facilitate those conversations. That's really, I think, the biggest job.
Sometimes people also miss this whole thing on conflict, because that is something which is rife in any organization. And for me personally, my main goal is to make people happy. So the moment conflict comes, like,
you run away.
It's like a ghost comes. And it's honestly, I think I get more nervous of going into conflict than the day I got married, which is, but again, if you look at the basis of what conflict is essentially, in its essence, if you break it down right to its basics, the only reason conflict arises is because I've got a viewpoint, you've got a viewpoint, and the only reason we have conflict is because either one of us or both of us is not open-minded. And if, yeah, maybe that's a big downfall in organizations, but until I can actually fully understand the perspective of where you're coming from, you understand the perspective of where I'm coming from, because that's ultimately where growth happens. Because if you look at conflict, that's really all that it is. It's just two different ideas opposing one another, and you're just not able to find the common ground.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, are we after the same thing? Because if we're all chasing the same goal, it doesn't matter that we're fighting on how best to get there. You know, that's the thing I just always remind everyone of is we lack perspective. We get like zoned in to the detail and the issue and the email that was really nasty. And we're like all head up and emotional.
Yeah.
And we need space to just digest. We're human. But our feelings should not be the thing leading us. We need perspective, we need context, and sometimes we need people to teach those soft skills in an organization to equip people to be able to have these conversations and conflicts and tussles and misunderstandings.
And this is also going into now a complete different, we've got so many tangents, this is like Pythagoras. But with people, and you know, I'm speaking for someone not being a business owner. I've worked for business owners. I've worked for organizations. And I think this is also coming now on the people side in terms of your values, your beliefs, and maybe something that we get taught where this train track just is completely screwed up, in my honest opinion, is that we often start with the organization and our values are aligned, our culture's aligned, and flip, it's lekker. It's like, no, a South African explains it the best way, it's lekker. And maybe sometimes people get stuck in that rut to say, okay, great, I'm in this company now, it's going well, but then 2 years down the line, something happens. New management comes in, the new boss comes in, something happens where all of a sudden you start feeling that little crack. Like, oh, sure, but my culture is not the same now. And then what you start doing is you internally start fighting with yourself and saying, great, like I need to stay at these oaks are lekker. But now the lekker is not loud anymore. Now it's like, yeah, they're lekker. They're kind of lekker. And maybe people miss that point is, again, like I was saying earlier on, is that we've all got a journey. And sometimes your journey at a place is a year. Sometimes it's 6 months. Sometimes it's 2 years. But then again, it's on this people side of understanding where you lie. And it's okay that you don't need to stay there. You know, people have this misconception that you need to be treated bad. You need to go through the stuff. I'm learning. Yeah, I'm lessons. You know, these oaks are teaching me. And no, actually you're being stupid. Like you need to move on. There's bigger and greater things happening for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we don't introspect enough. So having those real honest conversations with ourselves like regularly. So, you know, when you sort of start to feel that, ugh, that like, oh, I don't feel like doing this. I'm not in the mood for this. Ugh, you start to feel that begrudgingness or that unwillingness, that point of tension is a signal, you know, people should feel committed and interested in what they do. Because if you hate your job, there's those bad apples, right? It's going to filter through. It's going to result in people who complain more than champion. And the complainers, it's like a disease. You know, as soon as one person bitches in an office, as soon as someone complains in an office, another person will feel allowed to, vindicated. And it's a cycle of negativity. And it's a cycle of negativity in your head. So if something isn't working and you're not addressing it and you're not feeling confident or empowered enough, those are signals that where you're working is maybe not a great environment. And having to do some internal work is really important. What do I want out of life? What do I want out of my career? What do I want out of my job? And can you answer those questions?
Yeah, I think just to add to that, Kate, was go back to what you said earlier. It's like trusting your gut. You know, as soon as your gut says, hey, it's time to get out. And even though that lacquer light, as Simon says, is a little bit dim. And as Simon says, we're on a Pythagoras journey here, so we keep changing and going everywhere. But I really want to dive a bit deeper. This maybe is our last topic. And you guys, if you have any other questions for Kay, let us know and we'll get it on again. But okay, I really, you've said it to me before when we've met, and you said it today, that your business isn't all about profits. You've obviously your shareholder in your business, you've got shareholders. Chat to us about that, because every single business owner we've had on, it's all about profit. It's all about the dollar. So tell us, how do you stay motivated? I think that's the main thing. How do you stay motivated if it's not about the money?
Freedom. Yeah, for me, it's about freedom. It's about creating something, building something, making something exist that didn't exist before, doing it differently, because I've hated everywhere I've ever worked. And I'm not saying it was terrible. I just didn't enjoy the way it was done. I didn't enjoy the structure. I didn't enjoy the total soul focus on making money. I feel like we're human beings, and so capitalism has sort of ripped away all our good stuff and made us sort of try and operate in this way where you don't come to work for a day and you're not being productive, and your productivity is the only thing that matters. And the more productive we are and the more stuff we sell, the better we do as a business. And I feel like it's inherently problematic to run a business that way, because it's never going to be enough. Doesn't matter whether you're a small company trying to get enough money to be able to afford better people, or a massive JSE listed company who has to answer to shareholders with profit margins. If you are not taking care of your people because the only reason is how much money we've made, I feel like that's a really problematic way of running things. I feel like if you're solely being driven by money, you lack so many other aspects to being human. And I feel like people are motivated and driven when you look at things holistically. So yes, we are all in this business to make money, but we make money. We can pay ourselves great salaries. We can pay great suppliers. We can empower small businesses around us. Do we really need to be making these massive profits? I don't agree with the fact that billionaires exist. I feel like it's grotesque and unnecessary, because a millionaire is pretty fine. You're living a great life. So the excessiveness, the endlessness of unbridled, limitless power, because money and profit buys you power, and thirst for profit to make smaller and smaller margins, to make people pack shelves in a warehouse and not be able to go to the bathroom, there's a real problem there that I think as a society, we need some control measures. We do need a bit of regulation, because humans will just kind of run amok if we don't have some like humanitarian guidelines as to like what is right. I don't think we ask that question enough.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. We work a lot in agriculture with our systems, and we were chatting with in our office the other day around this whole piece of agriculture, and the best analogy with agriculture is with like trees and roots and stuff like that, and tying this back into the way that I'm perceiving this, and I could be stupid, but that's fine. But if your roots are shallow, this guy actually said it in this video, what happens beneath the soil happens above. So if you've got a very shallow root structure, you very easily moved on the top. But if you've got a very deep root structure, anything can happen on the top. And tying this back to business, I think in my own experience, looking at businesses that are purely profit-driven, purely focused on money, ethics becomes very questionable. Because if money is your driving factor, you're going to do anything in your power to get money. And that doesn't matter who you screw over. It doesn't matter which relationships you burn. And you tend to find that your staff turnover is very high. Whereas the converse, I've started seeing that people that have built a very deep root structure have not been focused solely on the money. They've been focused on, I want to build a cool product. I want to employ cool people. I want to employ people that lives are changed, like I'm changing the world. And the funniest thing is that those businesses make 10 times more money than the people purely focused on money. Because if your journey, exactly from what I understand what you're saying, is if you focused on all these other things, naturally money will come. But if your pure focus is on money, you're shallow.
Yeah. I will close the loop and get back to talking about people, because I have a segue. So when I started the company, I had a very sick parent going through a terminal illness, and I needed freedom. That was it. I just needed to not be accountable to my time and my productivity. And I also really believe that I can do things better than the people I've worked for. And that's not to undermine them. I've learned from and worked with some incredible people. I just got frustrated at the bureaucracy. I can't deal with inefficiency. I can't deal with the system that I didn't get to make. And that's my ego. And owning a business is just, you get a magic wand of like whatever you can imagine. That's how you can make it work. There is no right way of doing it. But I think that there are ethics, as in what is the right way to be, behave, make decisions. And leadership, if you're not considering ethics, you really are not making well-rounded decisions. If your decision-making is shifting money around and only looking at spreadsheets and productivity, you're going to really suffer when you have to deal with the people factor. And you deal with people no matter what you do. It doesn't matter what business, it doesn't matter if you're a coder who sits behind a computer, if you work in a company, there are touch points of people.
That's amazing. I was chatting with one of my mates over the weekend in terms of the characteristics of you as a person. And he was speaking about business owners and developing the characteristics and the integrity of who you are. And he said that you as a business owner, you're looking for a new employee. And before you put the job spec out, you say, okay, great. I'm willing to give this person 12,000 Rand a month. You put out the job spec and you find this really great person. This person comes, they fill all the tick boxes, great, you know, fit the culture, everything's great. And this person's actually really desperate. They've lost their job throughout COVID, and you say to the guy, great, what are your salary expectations? And the guy says 7.5 grand, and you say to yourself, yeah, this is a winner. I saved myself 4.5 grand a month. And he said, internally, do you make the decision to pay the guy 7.5 grand or 8.5 grand and you pocket 4 grand a month? Or internally, do you make the right decision and say, you know what? You told me you're comfortable with 8.5. Before you walked in this meeting, I was comfortable to give you 12. I'm giving you 12.
Yeah. I don't know if Kay can answer this one after me, but for me personally, I've made a decision for my business. I pay them the 12. I've had many suppliers already, even just this week, that I've actually had to tell them to double their invoice because I'm like, that's what I budgeted for. Mm. And that's what the output was that I was expecting. Because that's exactly the situation we're in. People are desperate, and it's Christmas time and people are just like trying to get any work in, whether a designer, developer, whatever, paid media specialist. And I'm like, no, this is the amount that I've agreed to and that's what I'm going with. And I think it's exactly that. For me, it helps me sleep at night. Mm. Obviously, for my business in the beginning, I thought it was all about money. But now I realize, hey, if I can empower more people and make them happy and enjoy what they do, you know, that's important for me. And I think, I think it's maybe 1,000 times more than that.
Gosh, guys, yeah, this is a huge thing. And I debate this with my fellow, you know, partners and directors, but we debate what is the right thing to do. What can we afford? What have we put out? And what are we incentivizing? Do we want someone to be working and coming from a place of desperation where they're barely able to function and sleep and feed themselves and their kids and possibly are supporting more people than their immediate family? Or do we want someone who's coming in and feeling appreciated, who's going to give the commitment to what they need to be able to do? Because the spec doesn't reduce, even though the money reduces, right? What you were offering for that spec is industry related and it's fair. And in South Africa, there is this huge desperation and need for work. We are never going to grow and solve our social ills if we're always disempowering people by only paying what they're willing to kill themselves for. If we pay people what we know they should be worth and empower them, we only end up empowering their families and the people around them and the people that they're trying to put through school. And if you're not considering people as human beings and you're considering them an expense, I think that you have some problematic ethics to look at.
But that's also the whole psychological piece of people, because if you're giving people I wouldn't call it the needs and the wants, but exactly that. If someone feels appreciated before they even come in, exactly like you say, Steve, with your suppliers, I can guarantee you right now that life has this thing, this magical circle, which no one can ever explain. But when something happens and you knock on that supplier's door, they will do anything and everything for you. It's the same with that employee. If that employee comes in and you double their salary without them even justifying anything, it's just you say, the right thing is to do, you're actually worth double than what you want. That person will also, they will give you 350%. And maybe that's this shallow and deep root structure. Because if you think shallowy, it's going to come in and out and there's going to be huge amounts of change. But sometimes doing that deep root structure takes time. But give it the time, and the rewards that you'll reap out of that are going to be 100-fold. It's just human principles that maybe we've just overcomplicated.
Are you trying to do things because they're easy, or because they're right? And right can mean very different things and be defined in different ways. And there's this like really intangible thing I've been thinking about a lot when it comes to people, and it's the idea of value. You know, when we try and cost things, what is it worth? When we try and bring people in, what are they worth? When you think about yourself and your role, what is it worth? And how do we value things? And how do we measure value? Can you put a measurement to value? It's quite an intangible idea, right? You know, I struggle with this because if I'm sitting in a meeting, I know I'm adding value because I'm going to give you feedback from what I see. And I know that I consider complex problems and I can look at the infrastructure. I don't necessarily have to make anything. I don't have to give you something for that because my attention is where I add value. And if you look at the value people bring and their character and what you get out of them, loyalty, you know, satisfied, content, confident staff, what are you trying to build? And what are you trying to curate? And what are the value drivers, incentives? What value is there? I think it's a very important thing to look at and to really be able to answer for yourself.
Yeah, I think, okay, as it's time now, I think, for us to end this episode, and you've added immense value to Simon and I. So I hope for everyone that listens to this episode, it's exactly the same for you. And as always, please pop either on our Instagram page, pop us a DM, or pop Simon on our DM if you want to ask Kay any questions, if we need to get her on to another episode, if there's anything that she said that you'd like her to digest some more. And we know, Kay, that you'd be more than willing to come on the show. So thanks so much for joining us, Kay. We both enjoyed it so much. And thanks, as you said, adding value. We love that. So thanks so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And thank you, everyone, for listening.